welcome to this episode of Drug Target Review's podcast. I'm your co-host, Taylor, editor of Drug Target Review, and today I'm joined with Ellen.
Thanks, Taylor. I'm Ellen, the editorial assistant for Drug Target Review, and it's great to be co-hosting with you today.
So this episode, we're going to be talking about the future of neuroscience for 2024, coming into the new year. And bringing their expertise today, I'm really thrilled to announce Dr. Steve Hoffman, Associate Vice President, Science Partnerships, Translational Science, Director of the Biomarkers Consortium, and Dr. Alessia Travaglia, Director of Translational Science in Neuroscience. It'd be really fantastic to hear more about your backgrounds, so I'll pass over to you, Alessio.
Thanks, Taylor. Hi, everyone. I'm Alessio Travaglia, the Director of the Neuroscience Department at the FNIH. I have about 15 years of experience in drug discovery between academia, management consulting, nonprofit, and venture. I'll turn it over to Steve.
Thanks, Alessio. This is Steve Hoffman. I'm an Associate Vice President in our Science Partnerships Department at the FNIH with a dual role as Director of our Biomarker Consortium Program. I have been here for 11 years and have a broad background across many and multiple disease areas. Also have some previous work history in protein assay development and validation, as well as at the NIH in transplantation, autoimmunity, and inflammatory research. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today.
Let's get into today's conversation. What are the most exciting recent advancements in neuroscience setting stage for the future?
I can start taking this question. I can start saying that it's a really great time to be in neuroscience. Neuroscience is today what cancer was maybe 20 years ago. 20 years ago, we started having the first biomarkers for cancer, the first drugs for cancer. And now this is what we're seeing in neuroscience. I was excited this year to see the approval of lecanemab, the drugs that was covered by media extensively, as you know, for Alzheimer's disease, that is supporting the amyloid hypothesis for Alzheimer's disease. And the fact that there are so many other drugs in clinical trials for Alzheimer's is quite exciting. So our understanding of the brain and Alzheimer's is really exploding. The other discovery that I'm quite excited that happened in 2023 and is emerging over time and is really setting a stage for the future is that we start breaking all the silos that there are in neuroscience. There is no more a conversation about Alzheimer and Parkinson and FTD and others. It's just the biology that is in common. Take, for example, TDP-43 that is emerging as a protein involved in all these diseases. And we're going to learn more and more as we go with time and research. And the other aspect that I'm quite excited about is the role of immunity in neuroscience. Immunity, immune system is not separated by the brain. It's contributing quite a bit. And we're going to learn more in the next future, and it's really an exciting avenue to explore.
I certainly want to echo your comments, but also add to that. I think that with approval of drugs like zuranolone, and now trying to make a larger footprint into the depressive, the anxiety, the PTSD area is a really burgeoning area and very exciting that we need to tackle this as one of the great next pandemics. We see with many diseases across the spectrum, not just in neuroscience, the cognitive decline and a lot of learnings from what we've learned in the Alzheimer's world, where there's been a more significant amount of research and time put in, we're able to now tackle and address these cognitive decline and changes that are occurring in many other diseases, even outside of neuroscience, as this, the brain issues that occur in many of these other diseases are involved. So both from a biomarker perspective to a drug targeting and treatment and personalized medicine, this has offered a whole new area for partnership to come together, public-private partnerships to bring, the support and financial capabilities and clinical trial capabilities in the private sector to match that with some of the basic research at the NIH or in the academia world, and really incorporate that with the patient voice to really address many of these new areas, many of these new diseases, and address cognitive decline and brain function.
Thanks for sharing both. So how will emerging technologies like AI and neuroimaging influence brain study and understanding?
That's a really great question. There is an incredible amount of data out there. And right now, it takes, let's say, me or Steve or you or others. You go online if you want. They download the data. You analyze the data. You spend a significant amount of time. The fact that we're going to have artificial intelligence, machine learning, and who knows which other technology are going to be developed in the next future to take all this data and analyze them, who knows which kind of discovery we're going to make. So certainly research is moving at a different pace that it used to move a few years ago. And the AI is certainly going to change the landscape of research in general, the market space, and also the kind of target and the drugs that are going to impact the market soon. You mentioned neuroimaging, if I got this right, and certainly it's going to impact the way we understand the way the brain works. There is a lot of research on the on PetTracer, for example. I mean, from my perspective, there is never a useless PetTracer because all this tracer influence and our understanding of the brain, and they're going to be critical to know more about which kind of biology is affected, impacting the brain. I'm quite excited just to mention an example about the tau tracer. They're going to differentiate between different tauopathies. Steve?
Yeah, thank you again, Alessio. And I think in this area of AI, another critically important element is that AI is going to be needed to really analyze the vast amounts of data that's coming from different sources, not only from some of the imaging studies that we're talking about and that technology, but also now marrying that with some other disease deconvolution and deconstruction that you're seeing on genetic levels, on protein levels, on lipid levels. And really, we now have single cellular data that we're able to look at scientifically. And now you got to compare that with some of the imaging data, to compare that to some of the patient response data that's able to pull these types of associations and clustering together. You're going to need an AI-driven data analytics. Not one person or organization is going to be able to really handle those volumes and complexity of data and make that aligned in a way that can really understand that for one patient versus another. So the AI in that aspect will also be critically important. Alessio address some of the emerging technologies, particularly on the imaging side, and very digital pathology has become really mainstream now and incorporated. We need to continue to advance a lot of those technologies so they can be easily applied to clinical trials for testing of drugs, for understanding brain networks and neural networks. You know, so not only can you identify cellular types, neural pathways by these new imaging technologies that are emerging, but also make them affordable, practical, and able to be incorporated into both clinical trials and clinical care out in the community as well. So each of those are very exciting, you know, really need to become mainstream part of care for patients in neuroscience.
Thank you both. How do you think the contribution of neuroscience will develop understanding of mental health disorders? If we could start with Alessio again.
Thanks. That's another good question. Your first question was advancement in neuroscience that will set the stage in the future. Actually, mental health, there's not been a lot of breakthrough and discoveries in the recent past, but certainly is the area where we're going to see more and more in the next future. If you look at the pipeline of the main pharmaceutical companies, you'll see that they all have a strong arm, I mean, the one working in neuroscience, in neurodegeneration. But there is a relatively small pool of pharmaceutical companies working in mental health. This is going to change. Certainly, COVID exacerbated the effect on mental health, the impact that most people have in anxiety and PTSD, if you will, in some cases as well. So we are going to see many initiatives focused on this space in the very next future.
Yeah, one add also I would say is that a lot of the scales of assessing mental health have had their science basis, perhaps not really the social medicine that's involved, social correctedness, you know, life satisfaction. We're seeing the tremendous increase in suicides, the large anxiety issues that are affecting us. And I certainly concur with Alessio that this is going to be not only a high pressing need as perhaps the next pandemic that's impacting the world, but an area of focus in moving forward. So I think we need to understand some of these other societal influences, socioeconomic influences, and how does this incorporate into and align and correlate with the science we see in the biology, the science we see in the effect and behavioral aspects that we might be able to measure both through biomarkers or through imaging, and how do these correlate to some of these addictive responses, some of these substance abuse responses we see, and obviously many of these behavioral or manic conditions that's leading to these adverse outcomes in mental health.
Thank you for those really insightful points. So following on from this, could you discuss the evolution of any technologies that you think will be popular in 2024?
Yeah, the things that I would highlight, some of these that I think Alessio will also echo as well, is we have a large footprint at FNIH and programs where we're looking at gene editing and gene therapy and cellular therapy. And I do think that as we identify targets, there might not be a magical bullet or a magical gene target that's perfectly related to disease development or disease prevention. But certainly the progression of these diseases through a series of genes that we're identifying, gene editing and gene therapy might be one way to not only correct that, get ahead of it, or limit the progression. And those, as those technologies develop and in parallel with understanding in neuroscience, I think that is one area for doing that can emerge and become a bigger player in the field where it's not now. I also think that there's a lot of advancing deep brain stimulation, other TMS or other stimulatory technologies that are now being developed. They need to be much more well-validated. We need to understand and have the ability to get to different cellular types, different levels of the brain, not just the cortex, but other levels of the brain, because different diseases are affecting areas where, you know, current practice and current stimulation techniques might not be addressing the exact area of the brain that needs to be addressed. So I'm very interested in those types of technologies continuing to emerge, continuing to advance, and really having impact in the next generation of therapies and treatments. Alessio?
Keeping aside the artificial intelligence, that certainly is going to be main technology that will be popular next year and the one to come, I would agree with Steve that brain stimulation is an area that is exploding. Not only like deep brain stimulation, but also like all the electrical magnetic stimulation. And I would include the virtual reality as well. And all these technologies are going to play a significant role in neurodegenerative disease, but also neuropsychiatric disorders. So I really believe that we're going to see more in this space in the very near future. It's interesting how until a few years ago, these technologies, deep brain stimulation or any brain stimulation, it was seen as a black box. You stimulate the brain, something is going to happen. I don't know what it is. Whereas now we understand quite a bit more about the biology and more to come. And so I'm quite excited about this.
One thing I wanted to add, Taylor, before we moved on, and perhaps even ask Alessio to address this, is really still stem cell therapy and regenerative aspects. I do think in the future, this is a novel area for continued development as well. Certainly regeneration of neurons, and really particularly with folks that have advanced or may have spinal cord injuries or perhaps are at late stages, this type of rebuilding of neural networks through stem cell therapies or regeneration, neuroregeneration, I think is an emerging area. Alessio, I don't know if there's more there you may want to touch on.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. I was thinking about the technology per se, but certainly we're going to see more in the neural regeneration in the next future. We know, starting from Alzheimer's, for example, we can clear the plaques, and then we literally have holes in the brain. So the next step is to fix it, to regenerate tissues around the scar. And this is happening in Alzheimer's, this is happening in Parkinson's, this is happening in multiple sclerosis, in ALS. And so there's going to be more and more research around this topic for sure.
This podcast is in association with Molecular Devices. With its innovative life science technology, Molecular Devices makes scientific breakthroughs possible for academic, pharmaceutical, government, and biotech customers. Head to moleculardevices.com to find out more.
Will we see enhancing cognitive abilities through evolving neuroplasticity knowledge? Steve, if you'd like to start.
I think that often when we talk about neuroplasticity, you know, I could refer back to some of the deep brain stimulation, some of the stem cell comments that we just made, but perhaps also in the idea of looking at psychedelics and depression, of different drugs that are out there that might be more recreational, but perhaps do have positive elements, you know, in depression and anxiety and other substance abuse disorders. I think in those scenarios, we have seen some basic research where there has been benefit, but I think they need to be yet explored, further validated in that area. I'll let Alessio expand on that or some other comment.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Actually, I agree with you. And, you know, psychedelic, that you kind of refer to certain area where we're going to see more in the next future. Till a few years ago, they had some sort of negative stigma, whereas we did see that they do rescue several aspects of neurodegenerative diseases, neuropsychiatric as well. So it's another venue where we're going to see more research in the next future.
What do you predict for the role of neuroscience in personalized treatments for neurological conditions and challenges ahead?
Certainly, we talk quite a bit about personalized treatments and personalized medicine. I mean, for actually all aspects of neuroscience, from neurodegeneration to neuropsychiatry, certainly is an exciting space. You know, we don't give drug that is going to work for all patients, but something that is targeted to that patient. I can say that I do see some challenges ahead, which is, how are we going to design a clinical trial that's going to be successful? Now, a pharmaceutical company is going to develop a drug and spending significant amount of money and resources for a drug that's going to impact a limited amount of patients. So this opens up several regulatory questions, and while it's an exciting area, and I'm sure that we will all work together with the FDA especially to solve this problem, it's going to be interesting and challenging as well. Steve, what's your perspective on this?
Yeah, I'm going to add a couple things. And when I think about personalized treatments, we're going to need to continue a path where we're able to incorporate large and diverse data sets. So the ability to get some of the technology out to sites, out to the community type of care, is that challenge in clinical trials, and using networks, established networks, building new networks, where we can get to populations of need and whether we can address, you know, based on ethnicity, based on race, where we need to make sure globally that these types of data sets are analyzed together, are brought in and reached all people and all areas. And that's going to allow us to then understand different populations, different variations or severity of different diseases. As with many, I have a lot of background in the inflammatory space. So in the autoimmune condition, you always hear the comment of, my arthritis is not your arthritis. And I would say in the neuroscience area, people say the same, that their anxiety or their depression or their abuse or substance abuse that they may have or addiction is not the same as others, and they want to be treated in a personalized way that fits their disease, not in a general fashion. And so the design of these trials and being able to get the patients in the field as opposed to coming to the site really looks at digital measures, really looks at, you know, community type measures that can be well validated and brought into the clinic and brought into these data systems to do that. That's always a challenge. These are costly, as Alessio alluded to. And I do think that through partnership, through some of these large public-private partnerships like we do at the FNIH, really we can bring together both the expertise, the resources, and the ability to tap in on a global way into populations to be able to address some of these challenges.
Absolutely. Thanks for highlighting those challenges, and definitely about the digital measures. It's so interesting. And are there any aspects of neuroscience that remain unexplored and intriguing avenues for future research?
So Some things that we have been involved with that I'd be interested in is certainly around music therapy and sound therapy. We've had some projects that we've and workshops and areas where we've addressed those types of stimulus and as calming mechanisms in depression and anxiety and autistic disorders. So I think that's an interesting area for future development. And similarly, I do think that areas of like sleep and being able to understand the impact of sleep disorders on cognitive function or whatever, or other areas that have really not, you know, really come to light. But I think they're very essential to brain health and brain function. And where we don't address a lot of those, the pain issues that cause people to have, problems throughout their lives is really based in the brain, not necessarily in, say, the joint or the back. That's where it might be the location of it. But those pain indices really are, you know, brain functions. And if we're able to address overall pain, which may lead to addiction, may lead to drug usage, may use to other negative incomes, these are interesting areas in the future that I'd love to see the community address in a stronger fashion.
I would say neuroinflammation is an area where we have to do more. We have markers of neurodegeneration, but we don't know how to measure inflammation in the brain specifically. And widely, there is a lot of work going on, including the work that we are doing with several pharmaceutical companies to identify a biomarker for neuroinflammation. There is a lot of work that still needs to be done in this space. Something else, I mean, we touch on the neuropsychiatry and mental health. Certainly, there's going to be more activity in the space. I would say we're talking a lot about diseases and disorders and pathologies, but what about the healthy brain? We don't really understand a lot of things about the normal, healthy, physiological brain. For example, what is a thought? How do we think? And this is something where I believe there's going to continue investment from government and philanthropists, and it's going to be quite helpful to understand the way we think. And the other area that I want to mention is, while there have been a lot of progresses in neuroscience, people still die of these horrible neurodegenerative diseases. And so we will continue to do research in this space. And I would say ALS is a space where there's going to be more research for sure, since this is a terrible disease, since there have been congressional appropriation, and so certainly more work is going to be done in this space.
It's really interesting, Alessio, what you were saying about how we think and our thoughts, and also, Steve, what you said about sleep.
I think that talking about the thought, the research on connectome is going to help in this space. But again, there is a lot of basic research that needs to be done to fully understand how we think. And certainly, in the long run, it's going to be connected with the neuropsychiatric disorders.
Great. Thanks, Alessio. And thanks, Steve. That's a wrap for this chat today. A huge thanks, Alessio and Steve, for taking part on this podcast and for diving into such a fascinating conversation. It's been an honour talking with you both, and it's so great to talk about this as we enter the new year. And thanks to our listeners for tuning into this Drug Target Review podcast. I've been Taylor, editor of Drug Target Review.
And I've been Ellen, editorial assistant of Drug Target Review.